Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This one is called Culture Shock, Life in London. Recently, I've been doing episodes about culture shock. If you've listened to recent episodes, you will have heard me talking to Gabby and Lindsay from All Ears English about general culture shock experiences that we've had. I've also done an episode called Culture Shock, the four stages, in which I go through some details about ways in which culture shock affect people. And now I'm doing one called Culture Shock, Life in London. So what's this all about? Well, this episode is all about common complaints made by foreign students living in London. It's common to experience some level of culture shock when you're dealing with the realities of living in the capital city as a foreign visitor. So in this episode, I'll try and clarify some of the confusions and frustrations related to everyday life in London from the point of view of people who just, you know, weren't born there or who are visiting the city for a sort of fairly short period of time, or people who are basically new, not just to London, but to the UK in general. You know that I lived in London for many years, and while working there as an English teacher, I heard a lot of complaints from foreign students. I also heard plenty of nice comments, of course, but in this episode, I'd like to focus on the complaints in order to try and explain or demystify them. Fair enough, some of the complaints are valid, but often they are just the result of those students or visitors experiencing culture shock related to living in an environment that was not normal for them or for which the cause was not obvious. It's important to try and find reasons for cultural phenomena that you don't understand, because it prevents you from coming to false conclusions about that place. I don't want people just assuming that the English are strange. I mean, we are a bit strange, of course, just like anyone, but a lot of the things that we do are really quite normal when you see it from our point of view. So what are those common complaints that I'm talking about? And what are the reasons for these strange and annoying aspects to English life? Perhaps the Londoners have got it all wrong and they do things in the wrong way, or perhaps the foreign visitors just don't see the whole picture. Listen to this episode to find out more, okay? What am I talking about? What kinds of things will I be talking about? Well, imagine if you've come to live in London. Maybe you actually have. But imagine you come and live in London, and obviously it's great because you're in London, it's one of the, you know, most exciting cities in the world. But after a little while, you start to realise there are certain things that you don't understand, or certain things that you find weird or annoying and inconvenient. You might perhaps have an English class that you go to every day. And who are you going to talk to about these issues? You're going to talk to your English teacher. You might say, excuse me, can you just, before we start, I've got a question. Why do you have two taps in the bathroom? And the teacher, who's probably me, would be like, oh, great, this question again. And then there's a whole... It sometimes, in my classes, that question ended up involving a long discussion with the students, posing all sorts of different theories, and some students getting a bit angry and annoyed about English culture, and some people concluding that the English are just weird, and other people making fun of the situation and so on. That's just one of many different examples. There's the two taps in the bathroom, there's the weather, the food, all kinds of things that seem to mystify some visitors to the UK. That's what I'd like to explore in this podcast episode. So let me just tell you in a bit more detail what you can expect in this episode. In fact, there's so much to say on this subject that I expect it will be divided into two episodes, but we'll see how we go. So first, you'll hear some short interviews with colleagues, with my colleagues in London, in which we discuss some of those common complaints from students. I'm going to give you a list of some of the most common things I heard students kind of complaining about. I'll give you that list, and then you'll hear some interviews with my colleagues in London. I wanted to find out if my colleagues could actually explain some of the weird or annoying things about life in London, and you can hear our responses in this episode. Some expressions and phrases from that recording are written on the webpage, which of course is now teacherluke.co.uk. Then you'll hear my responses to those complaints and some explanations. I'll try and explain the reasons for these particular aspects of London life as well as I can, and I'll decide if the complaint is fair or not, because in some cases the complaint might be completely justified, and in fact I can't think of a good reason why these things happen. So in some cases the complaint will be justified. Of course, it's not all negative. I'm talking about student complaints, but of course the students don't complain that much. But as an English teacher, when you meet so many students, you know, day after day after day, of course you start to notice certain complaints or certain comments tend to come up time and time again. But it's not all negative. The cup is usually half full. Of course, foreign students in London have plenty of great things to say about the place. Certainly there are more positive things than negative, but I find that when students have lived in London for a little while, they start to come face to face with the realities of living there, and then they start to develop little gripes. A gripe is a complaint, basically. So they might start to develop little gripes and complaints that they can moan about sometimes. And these things will confuse and frustrate them. So let me try and clarify now, okay? Let me try and put you in the picture and kind of give you a bit of background information and try and clarify the reasons behind these strange things. So let's start. The complaints about life in London commonly said by students of English. I'm now going to tell you a list of some of the typical complaints made by foreign students studying in London, and some I'll give you some notes relating to my responses that you can hear in this audio episode. You might find some of the complaints a bit bizarre, and that's normal. I found some of them really bizarre when I first heard them. But you have to remember that the people who said these things came from countries in which the situation is quite different. They're all completely true, complaints that I heard regularly, and they're very common comments as well. After each complaint, I'll judge the complaint as reasonable or not reasonable, and then I will either reject or accept the complaint. So I'm kind of not only explaining, but I'm judging the complaints too. Some of them will be accepted, and I'll say, yes, complaint accepted, you're right. And in some cases, I'll reject the complaint and say, well, I'm afraid that's not really reasonable complaint to make, and these are the reasons why, okay? If you don't agree with any of the decisions that I make, then leave a comment explaining why. I'm very happy to hear from you. While I'm recording this, I've got two things with me. I've got a cup of tea here, just to kind of give me the power that I need to provide me with energy to get me through this episode. And also, for some reason, I've got my guitar, just in case things get a little bit too serious. I can just play the guitar a little bit and it's going to lighten the mood. You see? I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to do that at all, but we'll just see. I've got the option there. I've got a cup of tea to help me, and I've got my guitar, okay? All right, fine. You're okay with that? I hope you're okay with that, but you've got no choice because there's not really anything you can do about it at this point. Okay, let me just really quickly fly through the list of complaints so you know what you're going to get, okay? And then I'll go into more detail. So here's a selection of some things that some of my students might have said to me in the past. First, number one, why do you have a separate hot tap and separate cold tap? I'm always scalding my hands. Number two, why don't you have electrical sockets in the bathroom? How am I supposed to dry my hair after I've had a shower and look in the mirror at the same time? Number three, the food is so plain and unhealthy. What's going on? Number four, the weather is miserable. It's always raining. Number five, why on earth do you drive on the left? Why don't you drive on the right like everyone else? It's like you have to do everything differently in this country. Number six, the trains are always late, and when they do arrive, they're full, and I can't get on. Number seven, why are there so many foreigners here? I haven't met a real English person yet. Number eight, it's too expensive. Number nine, the beer is warm. The beer is warm. This is ridiculous. Number 10, the houses are old and drafty. It's too cold. Number 11, the people are so reserved, they don't talk to each other on the train. How do I make friends with people? Number 12, why don't people carry umbrellas, even when it's raining? Number 13, the internet is so slow here. It's rubbish. Number 14, you just don't make any effort to speak other languages here. It's just English, 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 and that's it. Number 15, why, oh why, oh why, do the pubs close at 11 p.m? I'm just getting ready to go out at 11 o'clock and everything closes. What the hell is going on? Number 16, English people just aren't civilised. They go to the pub and they drink and drink and drink, standing up without eating anything. It's ridiculous. Number 17, cigarettes in this country are ridiculously expensive. What the hell's going on? Number 18, people speak really fast here, and they don't try and help me to understand. How am I supposed to learn the language? I don't understand what's going on. Number 19, when English people do the washing up, they use too much soap, and then they don't rinse the soap off when they've finished. That's like leaving poison on your plates. You don't know how to do the washing up properly. It's unhygienic and it's unhealthy. Number 20, you don't have carpet. Number 20, you have carpet everywhere. There's carpet everywhere. What is this, carpet land? There's carpet on the floor everywhere, even in the toilet sometimes. How do you live like this? Number 21, you don't take your shoes off when you enter a house. It's disgusting. It's unhygienic. It's dirty. And number 22, the British have a strange sense of humour. Right. There you go. Obviously, I've made it sound a bit more dramatic and passionate. When I heard complaints from students, they weren't that angry. Not usually. Sometimes they were, but most of the time they were fairly reasonable sounding. But these questions were asked to me as a general representative of the UK as a whole. And so I had to try and answer them, even though it's not necessarily my job, because I'm there to deal with, you know, the English. But I suppose culture is part of it, and I'm always very, very glad to talk about my culture and try and clarify things. What I'm going to play for you now is some short interviews that I did with some of my colleagues in the teacher's room in the school that I used to work in London. So I'd like you to imagine that you're now a fly on the wall in the teacher's room. You know what that means? If you're a fly on the wall, it means that you're kind of, you're in a room observing without other people being able to see you. It's like you're a fly, you know, bzzz, and you've landed on the wall. No one knows that you're there, but you're watching. So we use this expression, a fly on the wall. For example, a fly on the wall documentary. That's a documentary in which the camera is not very invasive in the action, and it manages to observe what people are doing, a fly on the wall. So imagine that you are a fly on the wall in the teacher's room. So as a student, somehow you've managed to infiltrate the teacher's room at your school, and you're listening to your teachers talking about the students and their complaints. All right. Going back to the list I just went through, I will explain all that stuff in due course. I will go through it all. And if there were things that you didn't quite catch or didn't understand, I will explain it. You can also read that list on the website, teacherluke.co.uk. Find the post for this episode. All right, so as you listen to these conversations, try and identify which things we're talking about. Which of those complaints do we deal with in these conversations? Okay, this is going to last probably about 10 minutes. Probably about 10 minutes of conversation. I recorded this a while ago, a few years ago, in fact, and I did it on a tape recorder. That's right. This is actually before I was doing Luke's English Podcast. I made this recording on a tape machine. So that's right, the sound quality will not be digital, crystal clear quality. It's going to sound a bit sort of, what's the word? It's going to sound a bit tinny. And I think there's a slightly annoying clicking sound because the tape machine just went click, click, click like that. Sorry, that's just the way it is. But, you know, you have to get used to listening to things in different types of... you have to get used to listening to things at different levels of quality, I think. So it'll be good practice for your ear. Okay, right, let's start. Imagine you're a fly on the wall in the teacher's room. And let's go. Starting now.
11111. Hello, Claudia.
Hi, how are you?
All right, thanks. How are you doing?
Good.
Right, so, you know the students?
Yeah.
They're always sort of, like, complaining about stuff.
Yeah, I know.
I've come up with this list of things that they sometimes complain about.
Right.
I know they don't always complain, you know. No. A lot of them like it a lot. They love it, don't they?
But some, I think everyone likes to complain sometimes.
Yeah.
Is it listening?
Yeah. We're recording it now.
Excellent.
So, one of the things that they seem to complain about is this thing about the hot taps, the hot
yeah,
and cold tap.
Yeah.
What do you reckon? I mean, like, why?
I don't know. I kind of never really thought about that. I've just always been used to it. I think we've had a new bathroom put in, and now I think they've started doing the merging one. I suppose it is better, but maybe in the olden days people used to fill a sink more,
yeah,
like to save water.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's so it didn't really matter. You could just put like as much hot and cold you want.
So is it? I mean, like, do you think it's actually more environmentally friendly?
Maybe
to do it our way.
Maybe it used to be. I don't know about that. And also, like, sometimes when you're washing hands, you just want cold water.
You do,
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe they didn't used to always have hot water on tap.
Yeah.
And so then
the sinks, like, originally just had one tap.
Yeah, so you could always have cold, and then you maybe you'd have to wait for the hot to warm up or something.
Or maybe, like, first of all, if you imagine you have your sink,
yeah,
right, in your house, it's just got one tap, which is the cold tap.
Yeah.
And then to put hot water in it, you've got to, like, fill a kettle full of hot water.
Or no, probably a saucepan if we're talking back in the day.
And then later on, when hot taps were invented,
they added them.
Yeah. So then you get like a cold tap and a hot tap, and
just warm.
Yeah, and people were happy with that. Probably.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's probably a revelation.
Yeah, it's only now that all these foreigners are coming over, telling us how to have our taps organised.
Teaching us about plumbing. Actually, it probably goes back to the plumbing system as well. Maybe they just had a cold pipe originally, and then
right.
Well, you know, people didn't used to have running water, so those students should really count themselves lucky.
Yeah, they should, shouldn't they? Yeah. All right, thanks very much.
No worries. Okay. See you later.
Bye. Hi, Naz. Hi. Were you listening to that conversation?
Not really, sorry.
Well, I'm talking about things that students complain about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that, you know, a lot of the students really love England and they love everything about it and all that sort of thing. But
yeah. We
do have a few students who complain about things. I've noticed they complain about the same things, right?
Definitely.
So, like, for example, let's see, I've made a list here.
Yeah.
I've had students complaining about the internet, and they say the internet connection's not very good here. Everywhere they go, the connection's rubbish. Like, what?
I don't think that's true.
No?
I think it just depends where you are, I suppose. And the type of whatever they call it.
Connection. Server.
The server, that's right.
You mean the internet service provider?
Yes, perhaps. That's right.
ISP. Yeah,
you probably know more about it than me.
Not really. Do you think it's they're justified in saying that the internet is slow in England?
No, I think that's the same wherever you go.
Okay.
I don't know. What do you think? When I've been abroad, it hasn't been any better.
Well, perhaps they just they've just been to internet cafe, like cheap internet cafes in Shepherd's Bush,
mm-hmm,
or stuff like that, which means that the only experience they've had is that the internet's slow.
But what about the school? The one upstairs. Some of them can be quite slow, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose when everyone's up there, all the students are up there together, like surfing the internet at the same time.
Yeah,
it does
down.
Kind of slow the connection down, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Hmm. Another one is that. Let's see. Why do we drive on the left?
Oh no!
Didn't we invent driving?
Did we?
Yeah. Didn't we?
I'm not sure.
Am I being arrogant? Did the English invent cars?
Well, I thought it was America.
I thought it was America.
The Americans invented the
airplane.
They invented the production of cars.
Yeah.
They invented.
Yeah, we probably invented it.
I think we invented cars, so we
I'm not sure.
Surely we get to
That's
choose.
That's a bit arrogant, isn't
we can
it,
choose that? Which side of the road we drive on, because we invented driving.
I tend to agree with them. I think, why do we do everything?
I'm being arrogant.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I can understand that, and it's quite hard. Actually, it's weird for me when I go abroad and I try to cross the road, I keep looking in the wrong way.
Yeah, basically. You might get run over.
Exactly, because we've got that weird mentality.
Yeah, we're stupid, aren't we? All right. Thanks, Naz.
Okay.
Julia, can I interview you briefly?
No, I'm really sorry.
Come here. Can I talk to you about something quickly?
No, I'm sorry. Look, really, I have to dash.
Okay. All right. You don't want to talk to me, do you? Okay, Steve. All right.
All right, mate. How you doing?
All right. How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad.
Good. Do you know what we're talking about?
I have no idea what you talked about.
We're talking about the students, of course.
Okay.
And they, you know, they're always griping and moaning all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Bye. Well, they're not really. They don't moan that much, of course. To be honest, they do like England a lot. Otherwise, they wouldn't come here, of course.
It's little things, isn't it?
It's little things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've made a list here of things that they kind of they get irritated by. Oh yeah, one thing is I had a student once who was really incensed about her host family, and she was so mad about her host family because of the way they did the washing up.
Really?
Right. And she was really, she couldn't believe it, because now tell me if this is weird or not, right?
Yeah.
They filled up the sink with hot water.
Yeah.
Then they put washing up liquid in it.
Yeah.
Then they put the dishes in and they washed the dishes with all the bubbles and stuff.
Right.
And then they took the dishes out and they put them to dry.
Right.
On the side.
Yeah.
Now my student couldn't believe this.
Right. Well, that could have been my house. That could have been me.
Really?
Doing absolutely.
So yeah. Can you imagine why she would think that was strange?
How else would you do it?
Sorry.
Naz.
You do not put them in the bowl. You have to kind of soak them and then rinse them individually.
Well, I didn't catch that, sorry.
You have to soak them all individually and then rinse them.
Soak them individually first, then rinse them.
Yeah.
Why would you want to rinse
That's
them?
That's horrible. It's got soap left on. It's got the residue.
Yeah, but look, you can never taste it.
And then you're just drying it on. No, I
totally
agree.
It cleans your stomach out.
So can I just clarify what we're talking about? That the a lot of people in England will leave a lot of bubbles on their plates when they put them out to dry.
I do.
And that's disgusting, is it?
Yeah, for me that's disgusting, because I think you expect it to just drain off, but I think it's left around the rinse.
Okay, so we should rinse them all individually.
My flatmate used to do that. I used to rinse them all again.
Well, it must take ages.
How do you rinse them, though?
Yeah.
You have to put them under running water.
Run them under the tap,
yes,
sort of thing.
So the soap's completely off.
Well, okay,
luckily I've got a dishwasher now, so...
Okay, that's the answer, isn't it?
That is, isn't it?
Okay, thank you very much, Steve. Andy, right, all right, mate.
Hello, mate, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. I'm talking about things that students have complained to me about in the past, right? Now, I'm not saying that students moan a lot, much, but, you know, these are some of the things that they have complained to me about in the past. I've heard these time and time again, right? So, do any of these sort of make sense to you? What about number two? Why don't you have electrical sockets in the bathroom? Have you ever heard that?
Well, no, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? It's dangerous if you have electrical sockets in the bathroom.
Okay.
That's why you don't have them.
So you think that we shouldn't have them in the bathroom?
No.
A lot of students... I had a group of students once who couldn't believe it. Because they, like, the women in the group didn't understand how they had to, when they dried their hair with a hairdryer, they had to go into the bedroom and do it in front of a mirror in the bedroom. They couldn't do it in the bathroom. And that for some reason, made them really angry.
So do they have electrical sockets in the bathroom in their country?
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
I don't know why, and maybe it's because it's a much drier climate. I guess if you're in the hotter countries, you know, your bathroom will stay dry, but often British bathrooms are very damp, so you don't want to have electricity there.
Yeah.
I think this one's quite true. You just don't make any effort to speak other languages here. It's just English and that's it.
Yeah.
I've heard that a lot, but then I think a lot of English people are lazy when it comes to learning foreign languages.
Yeah, it's true.
Because they don't really need to.
Yeah.
They don't need to. They can go anywhere and they expect people to speak English.
So would you say that's arrogance, or is that just because we just don't have any call for other languages?
I don't think it's arrogance. I think it's there's no real need to do it, because the only reason a lot of English people learn languages is for pleasure,
right,
or for fun. And
as then, a hobby or something.
Yeah, learning languages isn't really fun at all.
Isn't it?
I don't think so.
What, learning English isn't fun? Come on.
Quite apart from English, it's not learning languages isn't fun.
Okay.
But you know, you go to other countries and you travel around and people always are able to speak English, and not only that, they quite often want to speak English.
Yeah.
So I guess that's probably true.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
Okay, so there you heard me talking to some of my former colleagues and friends. Not former friends, they're still my friends, but former colleagues, because I don't work with all of them anymore. Not at the moment anyway. Right, so we dealt with some of the issues there. I realise that you might not have understood everything being said there because the speaking was a little bit fast and because the tape was not of perfect quality. Some of the phrases used you can find on the website teacherluke.co.uk. I also would like to invite listeners to write transcripts for this episode. I'll open a document on Google Documents, so you can start doing that, and then eventually you may be able to find transcribed versions of all of this. So who did I talk to? All right, let me just kind of clarify that. I spoke to Claudia, Naz, Julia, very briefly, Naz and Steve, and Andy, and we talked about, the two taps in the bathroom situation. We talked about electricity in the bathroom. We talked about English people learning languages. We talked about the internet connections. We talked about why we drive on the left. We talked about a few other things. What else did we talk about? Doing the washing up as well. So those are things that we talked about. Let me now go through all of it in a bit more detail. Let me try and explain stuff for you. As I said, hopefully I'll cover all of this in this episode, but it might take a bit longer. We will see. I might have to divide it into two episodes, but I'll do as much as I can now. Right, let's begin with the first one. Why do you have a separate hot tap and a separate cold tap? I'm always scalding my hands. Now, if you are new to this question, then I'd be very surprised, because if you've listened to episodes of Luke's English Podcast before, you'll know this is a bit of a sticking point for me. Okay, so you know that in England we have two faucets, a hot tap and a cold tap, whereas in most other countries it seems that you have one mixer tap, a single tap where the water comes out both hot and cold and is controlled by one single tap on the top. Before I try and explain this on my own, I think it's probably worth playing you another recording. Okay, I'm going to play you a recording that I did with a woman called Karen Robertson. She interviewed me last year. Last year, Karen contacted me after reading a blog post which I'd written on the subject of two taps in the bathroom on the London School of English blog. She lives in London, but she's originally from South Africa. And when she contacted me, she was studying a master's degree in digital journalism at London's Goldsmith University. And she was doing a video project on foreign students' reactions to London's plumbing system. So this is just a student project she was doing for her journalism course. And the subject that she chose to cover in this project was the issue of two taps in the bathroom and students' reactions to this issue. She wanted to interview me for the project. And so we did an interview over Skype, and I recorded the interview, and I've been waiting for an opportunity to let you listen to the conversation on an episode of the podcast, and this is my chance. Finally, I've been able to use this recording. Karen has researched the issue quite a lot and is able to give some pretty good reasons for the two taps in the bathroom mystery. Karen has given me full permission to include this interview on the podcast. So now you can listen to my conversation between me and Karen Robertson from Goldsmiths University, talking about the whole two taps in the bathroom issue. When Karen called me on Skype. I remember it was early in the morning, so I feel it. I sound a little bit groggy. You can hear me kind of like sort of sound like I'm still half asleep. I hadn't had any coffee at that point. Anyway, now listen. You can now listen to me speaking to Karen Robertson about Two Taps in the Bathroom. Here we go.
So, firstly, Luke, could you explain briefly what foreign students find so strange about the UK plumbing system in your experience?
There's a few things that they find strange about it. First of all, they're surprised when they see a bathroom which has two taps, because in many other countries, that's just they don't have taps like that. They have mixer taps. Which kind of, combine both the hot and cold in one stream with one tap, to control it. So first of all, they look at it and they think, what's going on here? This looks weird.
Yeah.
Then when it comes to actually using it, they just don't really know how to mix hot and cold. Now, obviously, this doesn't apply to all the students that I've had in the UK, and it doesn't apply to every household in the UK, but it's been something that people mention to me enough, with enough, regularity, for me personally to become quite obsessed by it too. My friends don't understand. My friends in the UK just have got no idea. Whenever I bring this up, they don't understand what I'm talking about. And I say things like, why do we have two taps in the bathroom? And they say things like, well, one for hot and one for cold. They don't see the problem. But yes, the students, they don't know how to mix the hot and cold.
Yeah. And if you suggest to them that they could put a plug in the basin? I mean, I suppose the problem is, the students that I've chatted to, it's okay if it's in their house and they put a plug in and mix it in their basin. Yeah. That's fine. But when you get into a public space, don't really want to do that.
Yeah, because they say it's unhygienic because you never know, who has just used that sink.
Yeah.
And they never know quite what they did in that sink. So, for example, if someone has just brushed their teeth in the sink and then spat into the into the sink, then there may be some spit in the bowl, and they feel that they would rather they feel like they have to clean the bowl first before they fill it with water, which they're going to use to wash their faces. So they think that somehow the basin or the bowl is an unhygienic place, and they don't want any contact with it at all. They think that it's just unhygienic to wash in the sink. They also sometimes say that the taps themselves are not quite long enough, that when there's two taps, usually they're quite sort of stubby in size, and so if you want to put your hands under the taps to wash, directly under the taps, that they're too close to the basin, and that's unhygienic as well.
Right.
Okay, so there's like the possibility of contact between the hand and the basin, and that is just unacceptable.
Yeah.
Because that's how you catch the plague, in their minds. What else? They also complain about scalding their hands. So burning their hands with the hot water. So what happens is, what often they have to do is they turn on both taps and they kind of have to move their hands between the two.
They do a dance.
They do like a little, some sort of Gangnam style hand washing kind of Macarena kind of thing.
Yeah.
That could be quite a good dance to create, actually. I think someone needs to make a viral video with that dance in it. Yeah, it could be huge. So they have to do this little dance where they move their hands between the hot and cold taps, and they think that they feel ridiculous when they're doing that. So that's it. They just don't know how to mix the hot and cold, scald their hands, unhygienic to wash in the sink, and the taps aren't quite long enough, so that's also unhygienic. And combined, those things combined with the sort of general lack of electrical sockets in the bathroom. Some of them have a socket for a shaver, the mirror, but generally there aren't electrical sockets in the bathroom. And things like the quality of the windows, which are often sort of very old and made of wood and let in a kind of draft. These are the old Victorian windows that in London, for example, are considered to be really desirable to have in your property. If you're looking for, if you're going to buy a house in London and it's got old Victorian sash windows, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
But for many sort of visitors to the UK from other countries, the students that I've taught, they see these old windows and they think, why do the English insist on keeping windows from the Victorian era? You know, sure. they want to have sort of modern, efficient windows. So,
so do you think it is on a sort of scale of 1 to 10? What is the are we talking? Does the issue cause bemusement, consternation, or anger?
Oh,
yeah.
That's a very good question, because for me, it doesn't cause them enough amusement. Yeah. I wish that they took this whole situation with much more of a sense of humour, because for me, I think it's a funny subject. But maybe that's just because I'm English and I don't quite see what the problem is really. I mean, I can understand that it's different. I can understand their criticisms, but at the same time, it's sort of trivial enough for it to be the subject of a joke. Really, it's not exactly really serious. But unfortunately, in many cases, when I've spoken to this with spoken about this with students, they don't really, you know, find it funny, and they get a bit angry. Yeah. So most of the time, it's the middle category. I can't remember what you said.
Consternation.
Consternation most of the time. Just, this is a bit annoying, and can you explain why this happens, please, Luke? Yeah. As a representative of the UK, you have to explain and justify all of the weird aspects of your culture. That's the kind of, often that's the atmosphere. But then occasionally there is a sense of anger, and I feel a bit disappointed by that, because I don't think it's necessary really to get angry about something like this, because as we know, when you go to another country, there are always things that are slightly different, you know. There are just, there are plenty of things that are different, and as an international person, you just accept that they're different and that there are probably good reasons for it. So I always try and teach my students to have the attitude of, it's not weird, it's just different.
Different, yeah. Exactly.
So
I wonder if it's maybe also the fact that they come to the UK expecting this sort of super slick first world environment where you would just imagine everything would be modernized and you wouldn't have to think twice about that.
Yeah.
And so it's different, but it's also bizarre to them because, they just weren't expecting this level of decrepitude.
Yes, that's right. I think, you're right. London is kind of famous for being a very modern place. It's kind of one of the financial, cultural capitals of the world. And so people coming here would expect everything to be all brand new and so on. Yeah. But there's a slight contradiction in London, because although we're very progressive in some ways, we're also very traditional in other ways, and we value traditional things. So I've never really been able to fully explain why we have two taps in our bathrooms. But one of the explanations I give sometimes is that we do value tradition, actually. And certain things, we quite like seeing two taps in the bathroom, or we think it's normal. Maybe because we like a slightly traditional style, because really Britain was at its best in the past.
Yeah.
What
I've discovered is I managed to track down an expert in UK's plumbing system, and he's offered a different explanation. I did ask him about the aesthetics of it, and he said, no, that's not really it at all. He said, essentially what it comes down to, it's a matter of history, obviously, and when plumbing was first introduced, it was actually to get drinking water in. So it was going to be, it was always going to be cold.
Yeah.
Then when it was decided that people would actually like some hot water as well.
Yeah.
Those that water was fed in through a different system. It had to come in through a tank that was usually in the roof in order to get enough pressure. So mm-hmm. they were never coming off the main system together. Uh-huh.
I see.
Which has meant that they always needed to come in through two separate pipes.
Yeah.
It's the two different taps. And I think, you know, in certain systems that has been changed, but yeah. but in the majority it hasn't.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to the scorching water, that's to do with Legionella disease, apparently.
Ah. Really?
And that little bug, I think it starts to breed at about 20 degrees centigrade.
Right.
And it's killed at 60 degrees centigrade.
Right.
So the water is kept at 60 degrees centigrade in order to vanquish these little Legionella bugs.
Yeah.
So
it's actually yeah. much more hygienic than they realize.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting.
That is interesting. That's the answer then, isn't it? That's the solution. So it's just purely a practical matter of plumbing.
Practical. Yeah. And what I'll do is once we've finished the video, I'll send it to you, and yeah. And you can take a look for yourself.
Okay.
Because yeah, for us that was the main reason. We actually wanted to understand why. You know, obviously it's an issue amongst students, and that's interesting in itself.
Yeah.
From as you say, you know, for British people, it seems utterly irrelevant.
Yes.
People don't understand, and so that it's just interesting from that perspective. But also, yeah, why? so hopefully we'll have answered that question in the video.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant project, and I'm so glad that someone else is sort of taking an interest in this because like as I said, I often speak to my friends about this. You know, sometimes in my classes, my students just sort of bring it up, and we end up discussing it for ages because it's quite an interesting little point to discuss. And then I, with all this in my head, I kind of go and see my friends and say, "Why do we have two taps in the bathroom?" And they kind of just say, "Shut up! What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Why is this even an issue?" They just think that I'm weird.
Yeah.
You know, at that point. So I'm kind of caught in the middle.
You found some fellow weirdos.
Yeah, good. I'm very glad to hear it. I'm very glad to hear
it. Great. Luke, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
One final thing. Would you mind emailing me a picture of yourself?
Yeah, that's fine. I will do that. Right. I was actually trying to find a good picture of myself, but I found one. I hope that the resolution is high enough because... you'll let me know if the resolution isn't high enough.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine, but I'll give you a shout if it isn't.
Okay. Okay.
Lovely. Okay, thanks, Luke.
Great, Karen. Thanks a lot.
Have a great day.
Okay, cheers. You too. Bye-bye. So there you go. That was my conversation with Karen Robertson. And if you managed to follow that, you will have heard the answer, okay? Did you follow it, I wonder? Basically, it's an issue. There are several reasons. I can't spend too long on it. It's an issue of development, the history of plumbing development in the UK, something to do with water pressure, which means that the two water pipes can't go together. Also, separate water supplies, the hot tank being up at the top of the house and the cold tank being somewhere else. And the temperature of the water is high in the hot water tank as a way of... preventing certain bacteria from being able to multiply in the hot water. So you might find the hot water in England in the hot water tap is boiling hot and it burns your hands. That's because it has to be kept at about 60 degrees in order to prevent Legionnaire's disease from developing. So it's actually a hygienic reason. Right, boom, let's move on to the next one. And we're already at about 45 minutes in this episode. Time flies, doesn't it? Time flies when you're having fun and time flies when you're recording and listening to Luke's English podcast, I hope. So let's move on to number two out of a list of about 22 things. I've got a funny feeling this is going to be two episodes. Why don't you have electrical sockets in the bathroom? How am I supposed to dry my hair after I've had a shower
and look in the mirror at the same time. Right, so it seems that in some countries you have electrical sockets in the bathroom. Fine. In the UK, though, I'm afraid we have decided that that's too dangerous, and we don't like to combine electricity and the water that you might find in the bathroom, because it could result in dangerous electric shocks. If you can imagine, some people who aren't, you know, sort of well informed might decide that they're going to dry their hair when they're standing on a wet floor. It's dangerous, isn't it? So because of that, there's legislation in place, which means that whenever an electrician fits electrical sockets in a new house, or even retrofits electrical sockets into an old house, the legislation says you can't fit a socket on the wall in a bathroom because it's too dangerous. So maybe at this point, if you're really thinking about it, you might decide, well, the English laws are ridiculous. They're a bit patronising. People should have the freedom to put sockets wherever they want. Well, I think actually it's probably a good thing, because if the legislation wasn't there, then you would end up with like plug sockets in the bathroom, and people who don't know any better would end up electrocuting themselves, and I think more accidents would happen. So it's a safety measure, it's a health and safety precaution. Right, there you go. So whether you agree with health and safety or not, some people think that too much health and safety legislation is ridiculous, and it ends up being like a limit on people's freedom. Some people believe that. I don't agree. I think health and safety legislation is a good thing, because it's ultimately trying to protect people and prevent accidents. What's wrong with that? So my judgment there is that the complaint is understandable, because in some countries you might expect to be able to dry your hair in the bathroom. But once you understand that it's a health and safety issue, then sorry, I'm not accepting the complaint. It's rejected on that in that case. All right, fine. If you disagree, leave a comment. I'd love to hear from you. Right, next one, number three. The food is so plain and unhealthy. So this is one of the most famous stereotypes about England, that we have bad food. And I could talk about this forever. I won't now, because I'm trying to cover a lot of things in this episode. But I could. I've got a friend actually here in France, an English friend who's doing a PhD into medieval English recipes, and he's a bit of an expert on English food, so I hope to interview him. Anyway, why is English food so bad? Well, I don't agree, first of all. I think that that's a myth. I think there's plenty of good food in England. It might be more difficult to find. I mean, if you go to France, let's say, or many other places, you find lots of food readily available. I mean, if you live in France, then you're spoiled with good food, to be honest with you. The boulangeries and so on, it's pretty rare. They're better than in most places, I think. So it's not fair to judge Britain on the standards of the French or the Italians, for example, these cultures that have extremely, you know, advanced food cultures. I don't know, that's maybe not the right excuse. But There is good food in England. In fact, there are many very, very well-rated restaurants in London with lots of Michelin stars. There are tons of great restaurants all over the country. But nevertheless, people still seem to perpetuate this idea that English food is bad. Maybe it's because when they go to the UK, they search for English food and they end up going to like a pub or something, or they go to a place that's selling great British food. Now, a lot of the classic English recipes, the ones that were developed or that come from England, not from India or Italy or China or something, but genuinely traditional English recipes, a lot of those things are based on working class recipes, like traditional working class ones. So these are the recipes of poor people who had limited access to ingredients, who had to make food that would stay fresh for a long time, or food that was portable, food that people could take with them to work. Okay, think about it. We don't necessarily in England have the same access to a wide range of ingredients because of our climate, because of our soil. Nowadays we do, because we can import it from, you know, other places. But back in the old days, food, you know, a wide range of ingredients was not available to people, and a lot of people were poor. A lot of the recipes that we know and love are basically working class ones. Okay, so that may account for things like why we have lots of pies. People would put ingredients into pies because it meant that the food would be easier to keep. It would be easier to store. If you put your meat into a pie, then the pie is easier to store. You can keep it fairly fresh if it's contained within a pie. Also, pasties from the Cornwall area. This is basically portable food. You take some ingredients, some meat, some veg, just whatever you've got available. You stick it all together into a pasty. You wrap it up in pastry, and then people can take it with them when they go to work. When they go to work down the mines and stuff. Let's see. Food often in England is specific to local regions, and naturally people are very proud of their local culture, and so they celebrate the food, even though this food is based on old traditional working class recipes that were mainly sort of practical approaches to dealing with food. Available ingredients available was limited because of the climate or because of the amount of money that the people had. Okay, so obviously there were rich people in the UK, royalty and so on, and they had food too, but it's pretty exclusive stuff and it's very expensive. So a lot of our super good food is difficult to find because it's in like super exclusive and expensive restaurants. In fact, really, really top quality English food is just as good as the best French food, in fact. And everyone, you know, all the top chefs, they all know it. They all know that it's true. It's just that it's a little bit harder to find. A lot of food is cooked privately at home. It's home cooking. And maybe we just have a culture of cooking our food at home rather than presenting our English food in restaurants. So it's a lot of good food is cooked at home. Come to my parents' house, come to my mum's house and try her cooking, and then tell me that you don't think English food is good. All right, English food is great, especially at my mum's house. Also, English food now is multicultural. We've been very international for many years in the UK. So English food reflects this international culture that we have. So a lot of our food is Indian, it's Chinese, we have Italian food, French food. So, you know, we eat your food. Thanks very much. You know, we don't have to... We're not... closed off to food from around the world. We're quite happy to bring in all of your delicious food too. So there you go. I think it was John Cleese, the comedian John Cleese, who once was asked on a TV show, why do you have such bad food in England? And he said, well, you know, okay, English food might be bad, but that's just because we were too busy taking over the world to focus on our cooking. Right, number four. The weather is miserable. It's always raining. Okay, why is British weather so bad? Well, it's not really that bad. Again, it's just changeable. That's the main thing. It's not really dangerously bad. It's not like it's not life-threateningly bad. It just changes a lot, and we don't have those days and days, or weeks and weeks and weeks of beautiful, clear blue sunshine. We get changing weather. All right. So it's a question of geography, really. We're far north of the hemisphere, and that's just what happens up here. We're you know, sort of stuck out on the edge of mainland Europe with the Atlantic Ocean on one side. And so naturally we get, you know, all kinds of weather systems rolling up across continental Europe. And so we get just lots of changing weather systems at that specific part of the world. All right, so that's just what happens. If you come up north to the UK, you've got to expect to have a bit of weather. The climate's going to be different. You just have to deal with it. All right, also, it doesn't really get foggy in London like the stereotype. You know, fog is like a cloud on the ground. You know those old images of London where it's all foggy everywhere and you can't see anything and so on. Well, it doesn't really get foggy like that in London anymore. That's just a stereotype. It's an old myth. We obviously had the Industrial Revolution in the past, which brought lots of smoke from all the factories. This is back in the Victorian times. And all this smoke from factories and houses combined with the fog You know, with fog from the river, the natural mist or evaporated water from the River Thames. And the result of this combination was just old Victorian smog, right? Smog, that smoke and fog combined. So back in the during the Industrial Revolution or during Victorian times, London was a very polluted place. Lots of factories pumping out smoke, and that created lots of fog. So it wasn't really... that created lots of smog. So it wasn't really fog, let's say. It was more just polluted air. Since then, we've cleaned up our air and it's not really foggy in London anymore. So the weather's not that bad. It's just a bit grey and a bit chilly. It can be dark and cold during the winter. But there are positive sides to having fairly frequent rain showers. It means that the country is very green. The countryside is full of greenery. It's very lush. And, you know, it's the same in other places. The weather in Paris, for example, is pretty much the same. So there you go. By the way, I've included some links to other websites on the webpage for this episode. So you can click those links and find out some more detailed answers. Number five, why on earth do you drive on the left? It's like you have to do everything differently here. Well, why do Brits drive on the left? Well, we're not that stupid, actually. We've been doing it for centuries. Ever since it was normal to ride on the left when you were riding a horse as a way of staying safe. Because if you think about it, right, back in the days before the motor car, people rode horses around. And if you are riding your horse through the countryside or through different parts of the country, naturally you're going to want to ride on the left so that you can defend yourself from other people coming down the road towards you. So that means you naturally you ride on the left so you can hold your sword in your right hand. Okay, if you're riding on the other side, it's harder to defend yourself with your left hand, unless you're left-handed. And so most people rode on the left, and so that just became the natural order. People rode on the left so they could defend themselves with their right hands. And naturally, that carried through all the way to the motor car being introduced, and so naturally people drove on the left too. In fact, I don't really understand why all of you people drive on the right. What are you doing? What's wrong with you? Why are you driving on the right? Just remember, okay? Remember, left is right, and right is just wrong, okay? Also, it's not just us. Plenty of other people do it too, including India, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, and large parts of Africa. So it's not just the English, okay? It's not like we're just the only ones who are doing it. Sure, most of the world drives on the right, and it would be pretty hard for us to switch over to the right, wouldn't it? I mean, how would we do it? Actually, saying that, our government is considering introducing a new law so that we will all drive on the right. That's right. They're going to phase it in over a 5-year period. First, it'll just apply to buses and then cars and then finally motorbikes. Those last two sentences were a joke. Well done if you noticed. Right, let's move on to number six. The trains are always late and when they arrive, they're full and I can't get on. Right, well, this is a... Why are the trains late? Well, okay... it seems that in the UK, we do have some problems with our trains. First of all, if you've tried to book a ticket from London to another city, you'll notice that the prices are ridiculously expensive. They're really expensive. Sometimes it costs more to travel across the country than it does to travel from London to Paris. It's ridiculous. It's an absolute rip-off. It's a disgrace, the cost of train tickets in England. It really is. And also the service is a little bit unreliable. It's a bit better these days, but British trains have had a reputation for being a little bit unreliable. Why? What's the reason? This is the result of a combination of one bad decision by the government back in the 1970s, I believe. Privatisation as... initiated by Margaret Thatcher during the 80s, and for the example of the London Underground, a very powerful workers' union for the tube. Okay, so let me see. I'm going to need to go to the relevant website for this answer, so I'm just doing that now. What the hell is wrong with British trains? So, okay. Let's see. Essentially, it's a question of investment at the right time. Okay, there was a point where many other countries in Europe chose to get high-speed rail lines, and in Britain we didn't go for it. So it was one mistake by a Labour government. They decided that they weren't prepared to spend a lot of money upgrading the train network. Why didn't they do it? Well, it was a bad decision. Okay, they should have upgraded the train tracks when they had the opportunity back in, I think it was back in the 1970s. Instead, they didn't. They decided that they would just try and adapt to the train tracks that already existed. So now this means that it's impossible to get high-speed rail links on the British train system because the train tracks are not the right size. This is being changed, and at the moment there's a big project called Crossrail, which is going to remedy this situation. They are introducing high-speed rail, and that's going to be introduced in the next few years. Point taken. It is expensive, and the trains are not very good because ultimately, back in the 70s, certain investments were not made, certain bad decisions were made, which meant that the trains were not as good as they should have been. For example, not as good as the French trains. The question of the London Underground, why is it so expensive? That's just because the union who controls the Underground is very good at negotiating, and they've managed to justify raising the prices to the point where we're now paying a lot of money for tickets on the Underground. The Underground is run by a number of different companies, and they're all kind of syndicated together in a union, and every now and then that union calls a strike. And when they have a strike, that means that the Underground network stops, and basically London just falls apart. It's just total chaos when there's a tube strike. People can't get to work. The streets are crowded. There are no taxis. Buses are full. It's an absolute nightmare. And so really, London relies on the tube. The tube is like the lifeblood of London. And so if the tube doesn't run, if the union decides to call a strike, then London is screwed. And so this is how this position has allowed them to, you know, that it's allowed them to push up the prices, because we've got no choice, really. We have to just go with it. I suppose this is because the tube system is privatised. You know, it's owned by private companies who manage to push up the prices, even though most people don't like it. If it was nationalised, I'd imagine the government would try and put a cap on the prices, but it's not. Margaret Thatcher in the 1980s privatised British Rail, and so we don't have a nationalised rail network. We have lots of competing companies that own different train lines and things, and so they, because their main aim is profit, I mean, they say that competitivity or competition helps to raise standards, but ultimately these companies just care about making money, and so they will do whatever they can do to just get as much money out of us as they can, and the quality of the service really is a kind of side effect of that. So it means that the train companies have managed to just cleverly and they've just cleverly managed to raise the prices bit by bit, and there's not really that much we can do about it because we need the trains. So okay, point taken. I accept that criticism. I think that the trains are too expensive, and that the situation is a little bit out of hand, and that the government should have made different decisions. They should have made sure that the right train track systems were introduced at the right time. Otherwise, if they had made that decision correctly, then nowadays we would be we wouldn't be suffering from such a complicated train system. Number seven, I think this is probably going to be the last one I can do for this episode, and it's a big one. Number seven is, why are there so many foreigners here? I haven't met a real English person yet. Right, why are there so many foreigners here? Oh, the irony. You won't make many British friends with that attitude, except for maybe UKIP or BNP members, but they might not want to be friends with you in return. Generally, we're a proudly multicultural place. Also, London is much more multicultural than other parts of the UK, so it's not really an accurate representation of the country as a whole. Take a good look around before making a sweeping judgment, is what I would say. Also, this is partly due to Britain's past, the fact that we've got a very multicultural capital city is due to Britain's international past. At one time, the British Empire spanned the globe. We've had interests and dealings with many foreign countries for many years. So we are tied to plenty of foreign countries in rather complex ways. This is reflected in the fact that we have a multicultural population. Many people have come from our former colonies. Some were invited after the war. Also, lots of people just want to come to the UK because there are plenty of opportunities here. And why should they be stopped? It's quite hypocritical to complain about the number of foreigners in London when you're a foreigner, even if you're just visiting for a while, isn't it? So London has an appeal for many people and for many different reasons. It always strikes me as ironic when a foreign visitor turns their nose up at London, saying, "There are too many foreigners here. What did they expect?" Diversity is an integral part of London's history and identity. Do they really expect some kind of Hollywood stereotype of London, in which businessmen with top hats wander around empty streets like it's the 1950s, saying, "Good morning," with received pronunciation accents? Wake up and smell the coffee. That's what I would like to say to people who complain about multiculturalism in London. Welcome to the real world in the 21st century. Multiculturalism may not be normal where you're from, but London is a proudly diverse place. Regarding immigration, some people in Britain believe it has gone too far, and maybe they have a case, and the local culture is somehow being swamped. Or maybe they're just using immigration as a scapegoat for other problems. Whatever the case, personally, I find it very disappointing to hear students or anyone complaining about London's diversity. The bit about, "I haven't met a real English person yet." Well, first of all, what is a real English person? Also, if you walk around with that kind of attitude, you're unlikely to make any good friends with Londoners, except perhaps supporters of the UK Independence Party. Right, so there we are. I'm ending this episode on a slightly serious note there. I hope that I'm getting through to you. Am I? Does this make sense to you? Do you understand what I'm talking about? It's difficult when you're not there in front of me. I've had conversations about these subjects many times with my students. You know, these are topics that are great for discussions in class in London, and my students in London have always had many things to say. So it's rather hard for me on my own to just talk about it like this in a monologue. What I'd love to do is be able to talk to you and listen to your opinions and respond to what you have to say. It's much easier to do it like that. Instead, I'm just kind of all on my own trying to construct a monologue on this subject, and it's a very complicated series of things. I'm going to keep going, though, and after I've finished this episode, I will just immediately record another one in which I deal with all the other issues I haven't mentioned yet. Okay? All right, good. So I've got about a minute before my jingle begins. So let's see if I can just play a bit of guitar for you before the jingle. All right, you probably expect me to sing, but I'm not going to sing. Okay. I might just talk to you briefly. I hope you got a bit more of an insight into some of those things in London. You might not be going to the city, or you may never have been there, but now at least you'll know like a little bit more, which should prevent you from making some of those sort of snap judgments, which can then form the basis of sort of ill-informed opinions. Because I want people to be able to see the bigger picture. You know, That's important. I think in any situation, it's always important to step back and think, there's a perfectly good reason for all of this. Okay, there's a perfectly good reason for why Luke's guitar is slightly out of tune. It's probably because the guitar's been sitting in the window with lots of sunlight on it, and I haven't been playing it as often as I should be. That's it for this episode of the podcast. Slightly weird ending there with a kind of incomplete bit of guitar playing. But, you know, I'm an English teacher. I'm not a professional musician. So you get what you pay for. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Speak to you very soon. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, you can visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.